The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Good morning, all. This is Ryan Tubridy. It's Monday morning, the 2nd of September 2019, at pretty much 9:05. We're here till 10 o'clock. 51551 is the text number. You can email ryan at rte.ie. Great excitement. Well, there was excitement in Wales, where Ireland did a job. Well done to them there. But really, all the eyes were on Croke Park yesterday. I managed to listen to the first half and watch the second. So you get the best of Irish commentary in some ways, because the radio does something totally different to the TV. I mean, that's the most statement of the most blazingly, blaringly obvious. But there's something distinctly Irish about going for a walk on a Sunday, listening to the happenings in Croke Park as you're wandering along, looking at the beautiful sea or wherever you might be. And that was gorgeous. But I got back for the second half, which was just knockout. Look, I'm not an expert on these things, but I know fun when I see it, no excitement when I see it. I know what it essentially looked like. The Colosseum, but the gladiators were replaced by two teams who just bet the heads off each other in a metaphorical way, of course, like great sportsmen that they were. And I was listening to the lads afterwards chatting about it on the panel, and they were agreed that it was a cracker of a game. So well done to one and all, and we'll see you later. I don't know what papers or coverage would suggest, not just papers, all coverage. Today, GAA in for big windfall thanks to a draw. My feeling is that kind of draws happen, and then they have to come back for another go. Good. And then, yeah, people will pay for tickets, and it's 83,000 people thereabouts will have another go at it. And yeah, it's a price and all that, but there's something about the fact that the GA makes all this money. I think it's kind of worth it, because what they do to the fabric of the country at all these levels, at clubs, county level, national level, they do something really important for young people. Yeah, it's just, it's kind of, yeah, take the money, reinvest it, it's great. David Gough, can we mention the referee yesterday? He was a guest of ours on the Late Late Show not too long ago, and it was before he was announced, I think, as referee for the big game, and he had been talked about coming out as a gay man in what is essentially a heterosexual world, largely in sports, broadly speaking, but GAA in particular, given what we're talking about. And he was the referee yesterday, and I was watching him, and having met him and friends of his the night of the Late Late Show, I found myself kind of supporting him as much as the two teams, and going, this is great. He had a great game by all accounts too. So it was great. And they're going to go again, and we will watch it, and we will be excited, and well done to one of us. Great entertainment for the country, and loved it. Loved it all. What else happened at the weekend? Well, it was a lovely weekend, all told. I got to see the Daniel O'Connell programme that Olivia O'Leary, I find it funny calling her Olivia O'Leary, because I would always say O'Leary, but it's Olivia O'Leary to give her the correct pronunciation, as I challenged her on her own name one day in the corridor. God help her, she might say she went away thinking, oh, if only I could have called security right there and then in my pocket with my phone and just gone 999 or something, just get rid of him. Anyway, the injunction worked out. I can't go near her within about 2 miles, so that's fine. But I can talk to her and text her in that way. But she put together this beautiful programme on Daniel O'Connell, a two-parter, which is available on the RTE player. And I find myself watching more and more programme, almost returning to the mothership, because there's such good stuff on there at the moment, which is great, because you can spend a lot of your time fiddling around trying to stream stuff that's just not great, or you keep looking on until something good will come up. But actually, it's sitting right in front of you. That document, two-parter, is a beautifully made, great history, great story, and you'd want to find yourself going, if you haven't been to Derry Nan House, you'd want to go straight there and visit it and learn more. But well worth a visit to that. And again, history teachers of the country, unite and have a look at that as a potential for a history class to show the students, and get a masterclass on the life and times of Daniel O'Connell. And her thesis essentially was that O'Connell has been kind of left on the shelf in Irish history, that he's kind of been a little bit abandoned, and that the history books, particularly after 1916, decided that all eyes would be on the rising and the rebels and that struggle and war of independence, and that O'Connell became kind of like a little old hat, as she said herself at one point. But she was attempting to correct that, And I thought she did that with considerable aplomb in that programme. So, as I say, well worth a look at, as was the latest instalment of John Creedon's Atlas of Ireland, which was just terrific. I noticed Rory Cobb was involved in that, so that would make sense too. Great job done, and well done to all concerned. It's beautiful. And obviously, again, I'll say it, the drones were out. The drones were out in these documentaries. And not just the, every documentary you watch now has drone footage. And this, I know it sounds like I'm being facetious. Actually, it's beautiful. It makes the country look exceptional. And John Creedon made a great point in his documentary, which was this. Sorry, I'll get back to the papers in a minute, but just by the by, he made this lovely point. He said, so it's all about the place names and the beautiful names and how they're Irish and some have been anglicised, but yet still with the Irish. And we do have that around the country and all over the place. We have the name Oscailge and Osperla, and I love that. I'm all for that. But the new housing estates and the new area with like strawberry plains and Tudor facades and, you know, they lack any soul, any substance. And the question that kind of made me really, his point that it really got me thinking was, shouldn't there be some class of state inclination to mind and protect the naming of places that shouldn't be given to developers? And this isn't an anti-developer thing at all. It's simply to say, it's just a pro-history and place thing. That really, developers, builders, people like that, shouldn't be the ones to name these places in the country, because they have generally no, if any, resonance or association with the place on which they are. And there should be much more thought given to the local council, maybe should be allowed involved. And that if a new place is coming up, you go, great, there's going to be 400 houses there, great. Well, the council will decide what's going to be called. And you take a vote and it has a lovely Irish proper name with a bit of local history involved, if possible. Just it's something I'd never given a moment's thought to until I was watching his programme the other evening. So maybe that's something that we can thrash out at some point. The O'Connell programme was very emotional, actually. It's particularly his piece, when he was in the House of Commons talking about the famine, because he died in 1847. The famine was kicking off. You could see him. He was all about repeal, and then the famine took over, and it's just this awful, natural, dare I say it, unnatural disaster took over, and he was a reduced man. He was dying. He was propped up by his two sons in the House of Commons, as he said, lads, you're going to have to help us out here. And it was desperately sad. Anyway, please look at it, and I hope you like it. Who did the music for the documentary, Texas? I think it was Colin McInamar, as far as I saw. I was looking at the credits. You might just check it out for me, if you wouldn't mind, and I'll come back to you on that, because the music was haunting and beautiful and appropriate, which is great. Donnerail Court and Park, yes, says the text, were also featured in that documentary. He represented those accused in the Donnerail conspiracy. A beautiful free park for anyone visiting Cork. Great. Thank you for that. I just looked at the front page picture of the Irish Examiner this morning, which is of the car park in the Douglas Village shopping centre. I was watching that news unfold on Saturday evening, that there was a fire there. But if you see the photo front, it's about a row of about maybe 20 cars, completely grey and burnt out. It's like something out of The Walking Dead. If you could film a scene there today, like in a post-apocalyptic world, and it is quite a stark picture. But thankfully, as far as I could see, nobody was injured or hurt in that, which is great news. I mentioned that not too long ago I found myself in St. Peter's Square, and the next thing they unfolded the red robe, and out came Il Papa himself to do the Angelus on a Sunday at midday. And sure enough, yesterday, according to Gary Manili in the Irish Sun, the people in the same place looked up and waited for the red robed or whatever it is to be unfolded and unfurled and out the balcony. But he didn't arrive. Where's the Pope? Dove il Papa? Where is he? Why has he left us? And they waited. 12:05, nothing. 12:25, maybe. Eventually, something came. He came out. And in fairness to the Pope, he came out and he said, I have an excuse for you, like a dog at my rosary. What is your excuse? Why did you leave us here in what was probably still searing, if not blistering heat at 12:25? And he said the following things. He said, I have to apologise for being late. Yeah. I was trapped in a lift for 25 minutes. There was a power outage, But the fireman came. Now, I'm shouting that out because he would have done that with an echoey thing around the Vatican. So, in fairness, I'm not far off it. The Pope then asked the crowd to applaud the firefighters, saying, "Thank goodness the firefighters arrived, and I thank them so much." And they did. They extricated him, obviously, from the lift. Italian networks that livestreamed the Angelus had been concerned that the unprecedented 7-minute delay might have been due to health reasons, before news of the power outrage, or outage even. Power outrage. That's London tomorrow. That's all happening tomorrow. That's the Brexit scenario. In his address, the Pope, who leads the world's 1.2 billion Catholics, announced the names of 10 new cardinals who will begin work from October. So there you are. The headline in The Sun must have seemed like an eternity. We can do better than that. 51551. We can definitely do better than that. Good old yarn, though. Look at Penelope Cruz. She's in the paper, the Irish Daily Mail today. Beautiful woman. But it's her dress that's quite striking and is the reason for the article. It is a beautiful dress. It's a gorgeous colour. Wedgwood, of all places. Wedgwood's iconic style has been imitated across the world since the pottery business was founded over 250 years ago. But this may be the first time it has turned up being worn by a Hollywood star. The designer frock, chosen by Penelope Cruz for her appearance at the Venice Film Festival yesterday, certainly seemed to have been inspired by the Stoke-on-Trent firm. The 45-year-old's jewel-encrusted mini-dress by Ralph and Russo could easily have been mistaken for a Wedgwood design in its distinctive blue and white. Well, whatever she's doing it right. It's absolutely beautiful and she wears it well. And beneath that is a review of Joker. I am dying to see Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker. Have you seen the trailer for it? It is just... watch it. Not now. Watch it at 1 minute past 10 during the news if you want. Or wait for Sean to... Anyway, watch it. It just looks so macabre and unnerving and just tremendous. And he looks great and he's demented and looks great. And it gets 5-star review in the mail there today. I don't know why they're reviewing it today, but obviously because there's such a buzz about it. And it got a 7-minute, would you believe, standing ovation when it was premiered over the weekend in Venice. Imagine that, 7-minute, or sorry, 8-minute. Catch that, I took a minute off from there. So lots of excitement about that. In the Daniel O'Connell documentary, there was, it was the Creedon programme. In the John Creedon programme, there was talk about wolves and how wolves used to roam the island. And then the question was asked, why did the wolves stop roaming Ireland? And he said, well, we were a very forest-based country. Trees everywhere would have been very suitable for their habitat and so on. But then that stopped. And yet, we're told today that the Department of Agriculture has decided, bring back the trees. Reforestation, I presume you call it. 22 million trees are to be planted every year in Ireland over the next 2 decades. Isn't that great news? As part of a plan to tackle climate change, it'll involve 2,500 conifers and 3,300 broadleaf trees for every hectare planted to get this all going on. The target for a new forestation is 22 million trees per year. Imagine. Over the next 20 years, the target is to plant 440 million, which means a significant shift in the use of farming land in Ireland. The Climate Action Report acknowledges a lack of enthusiasm among the farming community for forestry. I think their nerves are gone at the moment. The poor farmers, I think they've got a lot on their plate. Especially the beef people, men and women. And anyway, that's for another day's conversation. But a key part of the plan will be to persuade farmers to designate some of their holdings for tree planting in the future. But just on that, keeping in the whole area of flora and fauna, the Irish Examiner tells us this morning that Irish Wildlife Park in Fota, a wildlife park in County Cork, has become the first major visitor attraction in the country to do what? To receive an autism-friendly accreditation from As I Am, which is Ireland's national autism charity. This is pioneering stuff. And we've mentioned cinemas who do this and supermarkets who do this. And now we have a wildlife park, Fota, which we all mostly are familiar with, are doing it. This award comes following a period of training to assist autistic people and their families visiting the attraction and the development of an autism inclusion charter, which makes short, medium and long-term commitments to autism accessibility, understanding communication, predicting what will happen next, managing the sensory environment and other people's attitudes can all pose challenges for autistic problems, as we probably know. But simple changes to how things work, such as clearer communication and providing quiet spaces can make the experience easier and allow autistic people to fully participate. And that's what it's all about. Fully participate. Well said. You're busy on the text this Monday morning. That's great. 51551. Local authorities are involved, says Chris in Bray, in the naming of estates. It's a planning requirement. Unsuitable names are often rejected. Okay. But what? So how come so many unsuitable names are accepted would be my question then, which is strange. John Creedon is the man to name the new estate, says Anya. Well, certainly. He knows his stuff, that's for sure. And another says, up here across Ulster, lots of our place names are Ulster Scots. One of mine, says Sean in East Donegal, and one of my favourites, just outside Letterkenny, is the townland of Calhaim, which is Ulster Scots for cold home, which means poor land. See, I love all that. Mary says, I want to go to your history class. Just graduated from the University of Limerick with local history. Mature student and great feeling. Yeah, well, I'll keep you posted on the history lecture that we said we promised we'd do in Galway, but don't have details on that just yet. One or two other things then before we march into some music and bring you our next guest. Colin McInerney, yeah, that's right. He is the composer for the Daniel O'Connell Diet. That's just confirming that. He's one of Ireland's greatest living composers, and that is apparent when you listen to the music in that beautiful programme. Now, if you're buying USB chargers, travel adapters, power banks, that kind of thing, just be careful. You probably should pay the premium to get the brand that you've bought it with. Does that make sense? So if you go online and say, sure, it's only 50p, you'll get 50p's worth of junk back. It's monkeys and peanuts stuff. And this report that they did looked at unbranded or unrecognised brands, and they found products so poorly designed they could cause electric shocks and worse, start fires. I mean, I read out about stories here where you see fire starting from sockets and because they're not, the plug is still in it or the power is on in the little switch. So this would make you think. They looked at 12 USB chargers for use with Apple iPhones, and 8 of them were dodgy. And then they looked at 12 USB travel adapters. 11 of the 12 were dodgy. Power banks, 4 of 9 failed tests. Nearly 3/4 of the products purchased failed electrical tests. So just, you know, it's too dangerous to be buying tat when it comes to something like electricity. So it's a little, just a word of warning to tread carefully. One of the most annoying things you can probably receive is a Christmas card that has glitter on it. Tips onto your lap, goes into your laptop, goes into your computer, goes into your food, goes into your hands, your hair. Then you scratch your cheek, and then somebody two days later goes, "Were you putting glitter on?" He says, "No, I got a card from." Anyway, that's some people's excuse. Anyway, the glitter, it seems that Marks and Spencer, the shop, has announced that Christmas this year, well, it is September, we're on the road now, will be glitter free, as it bans non-recyclable sparkles from its stores. God, Kylie Minogue will have to cancel the rest of her life. Festivities are set to be less sparkly this year, as glitter will not feature on their Christmas range. The store is embracing a sustainable season of cheer. Customers will no longer be able to buy glitter greeting cards, wrapping paper, tags, gift bags, calendars, crackers, all in a bid to improve recyclability and reduce the impact of microplastics on the environment. Now you know, glitter is made from small pieces of plastic that add to the growing amount of microplastic in the oceans. Items with glitter on them are non-recyclable. So let's call glitter into the court of public opinion. Try him, it, them, and sentence them to life imprisonment. Now, 51551 is the text number. You can email ryan@rte.ie. At 9:23, it's Monday morning and we're truly open for business.